The reading today is from Raising the Roof by Alice Mann. Congregations do not grow or decline smoothly, but tend to plateau at certain predictable levels of attendance. In order to break through an attendance plateau, the congregation must deliberately relinquish familiar patterns of behavior and begin to act as larger congregations act. These descriptions of congregational dynamics relate to a growing body of theory about the way human beings organize themselves. Humans tend to form primary groups of 12 or so, and clans of about 50. About 150, a qualitative shift, the tipping point, occurs and a true organization comes into being. With official roles and structures, formal communications, and explicit procedures. Larger organizations seem to work best when built of combinations of these natural-sized groups.
So our theme for the month of October has been abundance. I wonder, are you comfortable with the notion that we live in a world of abundance? Or is there a nagging fear, a sense of impending doom, perhaps a deep-seated fear that the future is not one of abundance, but one of scarcity? As much as you would like to see things get better, do you have a fear that they're going to get worse? Do you long for stability? Are you willing to trade the uncertainty of risks for the growth and for the comfort of that stability? I think the paradox of fearing scarcity in a time of abundance is captured in the buzzword of our time, sustainability. Don't you hear that word all the time? Sustainability and sustainable development. Online dictionaries now plot the use of words over time, which is really interesting. And if you look at that word, sustainable or sustainability, it's not really on the charts until about the mid-80s. And towards the end of the 80s, it just takes off. And now it's one of the more common words in the English language. That word, sustainable, and particularly the phrase sustainable development, was brought to the mainstream in the Brundtland Report of the United Nations in October of 1987. And while I was reading that and preparing the sermon, I thought of the service we did for Valerie and the involvement with the United Nations and how we have to work to keep the United Nations in the forefront of our consciousness. It does amazing work. This whole idea of sustainable development was the result of work done, initiated by the United Nations in 1987. Take a global look at the planet and say, how do we manage the planet? And today, how many years later is that? 30 years? 40 years later? We're 30 years later. We have a president of the United States who's not interested in that. Let's see how we can do within our country and not worry about what's happening with the rest of the world. To rally countries to work and develop economies that would not be disastrously impactful on world ecosystems, the United Nations decided to establish the Brundtland Commission. I think Scott could tell us a little bit about that commission and the author. The author was Gro Harlem Brundtland, who was the first female prime minister of Norway, and was chosen because of her strong background in science and public health. An amazing person, and she served three different times as prime minister in Norway. The Brundtland Commission officially dissolved in December 1987 after releasing a report titled Our Common Future. The document popularized and defined the term sustainable development. So, you know me well enough to know that I sometimes take a contrary point of view on things as a way of stimulating discussion. So, I'm thinking about that word sustainable, and it makes me a little bit uncomfortable, and I'm trying to figure out why. So if you'll bear with me, part of the remainder of the sermon might be kind of working that through and how it relates to this congregation. See, in its simplest definition, sustainable means able to be maintained at a present rate or level. Kind of a stasis. We can sort of keep doing what we're doing, and things will not change dramatically, and we'll be okay. You might think of sustainable fishery, for example, where the amount of fish harvested is below any threshold that would threaten the overall health and size of the fish stocks. A sustainable fishery, in theory, could continue forever, perhaps in the manner that the indigenous people of Mi'kma'ki fished. This understanding of sustainability is attractive. It appeals to our desire for stability. But it speaks of a utopia that never was and never will be. The sustainability of the Mi'kmaq fishery was made possible only because of the mortality rates of the Mi'kmaq peoples that kept their population low and limited the number of people fishing and using that resource. When we came along with modern medicine and with extending human lifespan, the load and the pressure on the fishery increased dramatically. The Brundtland Report provides a more useful definition of the idea of sustainable development. This is their definition. Sustainable development is development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. Or maybe more simply, a sustainable enterprise is one that meets the needs of those presently engaged without compromising the needs of those who may be engaged in the future. This definition is, to my mind, more realistic and at the same time, more problematic, more complicated. One can argue that mining, then under this definition, is a sustainable enterprise. Although individual mines are inevitably depleted, new mines are developed, new forms of extraction is found, new substitute materials replace mine products, just the way glass fiber has replaced copper in our electronics industry. Mining, done in an environmentally sound way then, does not compromise the needs of future generations. And I put that in brackets, done in an environmentally sound way. I'm not claiming that all mining is good for the planet. I took out a little footnote, but maybe I'll stick it in here now, that I studied to be a mining engineer. That was going to be my first career, so I had a little bias in that opinion. So, for the sake of argument, and you don't get to argue with me after the sermon, by the way. You can have your response, but I'm not going to argue with you, maybe over coffee. So, even the historic harvesting of whales, for example, for the essential production of oil at the time. It was the main supply of oil at the time. At a time when industry was developing, it was used for lighting, it was used for lubrication. Whale oil was sustained an economy. That could be seen as sustainable in the context of this definition. Because whale oil was replaced in due course with petroleum. The harvesting of whales, while detrimental to the independent web, did not compromise the economic well-being of future generations. On the contrary, it enabled the industrial advances and led to the development of petroleum and to our modern economy. Now, what's left out of all this definition of sustainability and the Brundtland Report's definition is talking from a human perspective. What's sustainable for humanity? Does it affect future generations of humanity? Of course, whaling had a huge effect on future generations of whales. While the ideas around sustainable industrial economies are fascinating, I suppose that's really for another sermon. Let me see if I can relate all of this to the original topic of a sustainable church. On the cover of the Order of Service today, I put a picture of the cathedral in Chartres, the Grand French Cathedral. And as I looked at that, I thought about sustainable churches and were the cathedrals of the Middle Ages something sustainable? Actually not. We couldn't build those buildings now. They are supported now largely through governments and through other funds. They're certainly not supported primarily by those who attend the cathedral. It wasn't sustainable, but it was a very important step in the development of humanity, in the development of religion in the Middle Ages. Do we want a sustainable church? A church that meets the needs of the present congregation without compromising the needs of a future congregation. The problem with all of this is, how do we know what the needs of a future congregation are going to be? When our forefathers were out on the ocean whaling and getting whale oil, if they stopped and thought about it, they would have concluded that this probably is not sustainable. You know, what's going to happen? They wouldn't have any idea that they would be drilling for oil in the ground and recovering petroleum at some point. So when you're in a phase of humanity, it's hard to know what the future needs are going to be. And within a church, it's very hard to know what the future needs are going to be for the coming generations. Even for the younger people of this generation. If we think back to Anne's reading from the book Raising the Roof, we'll recall that living in a community of 50 or so people seems to be a natural unit that meets a need. It seems to be an ingrained human need to have that community, that what they called in the book a clan, of no more than about 50 people, because you can identify people and you can remember names, you can feel comfortable with that group. When you start to exceed that, you lose that sustainability of community, unless you put structures in place to ensure that you preserve it. That clan provides intimacy and friendship and familiarity, and the need for much, it does all this without the need for much formality or role definition or bureaucracy. But is it sustainable? Well, it meets the needs of those who are in the congregation. So it meets the first step of sustainability. It meets the needs of those who are there. But is that sustainable? Under the larger definition, does it meet the needs of those who could be part of a larger congregation? By keeping ourselves small, by doing things the way we've always done them, by holding on tight to the comfortable present, are we compromising our future and the potential future of Unitarian Universalism? We're not producing whale oil. We're not producing oil that's necessary for society. But we're producing something even more necessary, something more profound. We're providing a basis of community, a basis for diversity, a basis for sharing amongst people, a basis for an ethical life, a basis for raising children in a non-dogmatic way. That's what we're producing. Are we doing it sustainably? Are we doing it in a way that's going to meet the needs of the next generation? See, stability is not sustainability. Are we trading the potential to serve more people for the stability that is a small group? In order to really address the issue of sustainability, we need to know, or at least have a working hypothesis about what the religious needs of our younger generations are. These needs certainly include identification with a supportive and friendly community, a place of acceptance, a place where the individual can give meaning to their lives within the context of their own belief system. So that was my effort at exploring the idea of sustainability from the point of view of a church. And I hope we'll be exploring this in the months and the years ahead. I realize I've just barely scratched the surface of what it means to be a sustainable church. And I hope you'll allow me to return to the topic again soon in the future. Probably not a good way to end a sermon. That's it. Thank you.